his most famous horror story, for free. There is no better way to listen to the Classic Tales podcast than by using the Classic Tales app. Check it out at the iTunes Music Store today. It's also available for Android. I'm pleased to announce that I will be producing the novel Pip and the Zombies by Charles Dickens and Lewis L. Skipper. This fun bit of fan fiction is centered around the world of Great Expectations, but now Pip is schooled in the world of zombie hunting. Not graphically violent and a great introduction to Dickens, Pip and the Zombies will be coming to thebestaudiobooks.com on October 1st. And for those of you who can't wait and want to hear the original Great Expectations, enter the coupon code ZOMBIES when you check out and save $6 off the retail price. This special is available for a limited time, so don't delay. I was directed to this week's story by Neil Gaiman. He wrote the introduction to Rudyard Kipling's Tales of Horror and Fantasy. The following is taken from the introduction. It's a story I read once, believing every word all the way to the end, where I understood the encounter the woman had had, then started again at the beginning, understanding now the tone of voice and what I was being told. It was a tour de force. It's a story about loss and lies and what it means to be human and to have secrets, and it can and does and should break your heart. And now, The Gardener by Rudyard Kipling. The Gardener. One grave to me was given, one watch till judgment day, and God looked down from heaven and rolled the stone away. One day in all the years, one hour in that one day, his angel saw my tears and rolled the stone away. Everyone in the village knew that Helen Terrell did her duty by all her world, and by none more honorably than by her only brother's unfortunate child. The village knew, too, that George Terrell had tried his family severely since early youth, and were not surprised to be told that, after many fresh starts given and thrown away, he, an inspector of Indian police, had entangled himself with the daughter of a retired non-commissioned officer, and had died of a fall from a horse a few weeks before his child was born. Mercifully, George's father and mother were both dead, and though Helen, 35 and independent, might well have washed her hands of the whole disgraceful affair, she most nobly took charge, though she was, at the time, under threat of lung trouble, which had driven her to the south of France. She arranged for the passage of the child and a nurse from Bombay, met them at Marseille, nursed the baby through an attack of infantile dysentery due to the carelessness of the nurse, whom she had had to dismiss, and at last, thin and worn but triumphant, brought the boy late in the autumn, wholly restored, to her Hampshire home. All these details were public property, for Helen was as open as the day, and held that scandals are only increased by hushing them up. She admitted that George had always been rather a black sheep, but things might have been much worse if the mother had insisted on her right to keep the boy. Luckily, it seemed that people of that class would do almost anything for money, and as George had always turned to her in his scrapes, she felt herself justified, her friends agreed with her, in cutting the whole non-commissioned officer connection and giving the child every advantage. A christening, by the rector, under the name of Michael, was the first step. So far as she knew herself, she was not, she said, a child lover, but for all his faults, she had been very fond of George, and she pointed out that little Michael had his father's mouth to a line, which made something to build upon. As a matter of fact, it was the Terrell forehead, broad, low, and well-shaped, with the widely spaced eyes beneath it, that Michael had most faithfully reproduced. His mouth was somewhat better cut than the family type, but Helen, who would concede nothing good to his mother's side, vowed he was a Terrell...